They say that the average American's attention span is getting shorter and shorter. The notoriously ill-focused goldfish has an attention span of 9 seconds, but according to a study published by Time magazine in recent years, people now generally lose concentration at 8 seconds. If any generation is guilty of this inability to pay attention and inability to remember what just happened, it's my generation probably. An increasingly digitized lifestyle means that we no longer need to pay attention and to memorize certain things that we used to have to, like addresses and phone numbers and directions. But all technology and joking aside, the ability to remember things speaks to all of our inherent limitations as people. Shifting our focus to the next thing and forgetting whatever just happened is something that all of us do. One of the main themes in the whole arc of the Old and New Testaments is that God's people have a historical habit of forgetting what God has done for them. No matter how many times the people forget, though, God always remembers us. In the Book of Common Prayer, one of the daily collects that's appointed for morning prayer asks God to help us remember him. The prayer asks, quote, that in all the cares and occupations of our life, we may not forget you, but may remember that we are ever walking in your sight. One of my friends from seminary pointed out one day that this is actually a pretty mundane thing to ask, because at first glance, yes, asking God that we not forget who God is seems like we're lowballing both God and ourselves. Why wouldn't we ask for a cure for cancer, for example, or peace in the Ukraine? But the simplicity of that prayer request, that we not forget God, it kind of reminds me of those 9 lepers today in Luke's gospel who were rushing ahead to the next thing instead of pausing to remember what God had done for them just a few moments before. In this sequence of today's gospel, Jesus first cleanses all 10 of the people with their skin disease, and then there's only one, the Samaritan, who turns around to give thanks and who receives the proclamation from Jesus that, quote, your faith has made you well. There's a Bible translation called The Message, which translates the Bible into contemporary language, and it translates that word, Jesus' words to the Samaritan, like this. Your faith has healed you and saved you. And then the King James Version translates it as, your faith has made you whole. And the thing that these translations, I think, have in common is that with Jesus, there seems to be more at stake here than just a healing from disease. And there's more to it than the way that we here define healing today. Interestingly, the astonishing pace of medical research and progress that's characterized the last century has been accompanied with a diminishing definition of healing. The way our culture defines healing and health has become limited to the absence of physical pain and ailments. But health, writes the theologian John Swinton, he writes, health is a relational concept which has nothing to do with our bodily shape, the number of our chromosomes, or the sharpness of our minds. The most hedonistic, intellectually astute athlete can be in need of healing, and the most deeply impaired individuals can be healthy. In the days of the writing of Luke's gospel, leprosy was a disorder with social and spiritual ramifications that far outstripped the realities of its physical presentation. So in other words, the term leprosy, it was used to designate a number of different skin diseases, and the fundamental problem with these 10 who we read about this morning was that in all likelihood, they had a malady that was not life-threatening, but instead, these people were faced with a debilitating social disorder. They would have been seen as living under a curse, ritually unclean, and pushed to the margins of society. But true healing and wholeness, the kind that's rooted in Jesus' mercy and the kind that we just heard about in the gospel, it's not the absence of disease or disability per se, but instead a deep awareness of the presence of God. And that's what the Samaritan in today's story recognizes, that the restorative power of God is standing right in front of him in Jesus. That's what made him well. When I was a hospital chaplain during 2020, there were so many people who were sick and suffering and isolated, and there weren't enough hours in the day to see everybody. But some of the most physically frail people who I got to sit with during that time were also experiencing some of the most profound spiritual healing in their lives. They had stopped striving. They'd stopped striving to buy the bigger house or to get their kids into the right college or to downsize to the perfect apartment. Instead, the people who I sat with were in this sacred process of remembering, of looking back over their lives with the perspective of seeing what God had done for them, of finding a sense of peace, comfort, and support. And I don't mean to sentimentalize death and dying. It is a painful and violent business. But for many of these people, as they prepared to leave this life and to return to God, they were experiencing a type of restoration in their relationships with their family and their community and with God. They forgave and they asked for forgiveness. Their perspective on life was shifting. In Jesus' day, the distinguishing characteristic between the healed Samaritan from the other nine is that the Samaritan's perspective also shifted. He saw that he was healed, it says, he saw. His expanded perspective evokes the words that we hear Jesus proclaim in the temple during Epiphany, usually, which is that Jesus got up into the pulpit in the temple and said, he quoted from Isaiah, he said, "I am the Spirit of the Lord is upon me for the recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." All 10 of those people experienced healing in the gospel, but only one of them saw and was healed. He wasn't only cleansed, but on account of his faith, he gained something more, which was that insight into Jesus' role. He was able to see, and that's what made him enlightened. Beyond this personal restoration to God, the healing in Jesus extends to community life. In the story of these people cleansed of leprosy, Jesus instructs them to go and present themselves to the priests in the temple. And one of the priests' roles at the time was to restore excluded persons to their roles in society. So this is a really intentional set of instructions by Jesus. Presenting themselves to the priests would allow these people to return to communal worship, to re-enter society, and to be reconnected to that wider community. There's a similar dynamic at play of the way that God acts in the reading from Jeremiah 29 that we also heard this morning. For the few Israelites around 600 BC who had survived that siege of Jerusalem and the long journey to Babylon, a letter from the prophet Jeremiah encouraged those in exile to just take a look around. "Look," he says, "through the wreckage of exile," Jeremiah is encouraging them to look and to remember who they are. He says, "Build houses and live in them, plant gardens and eat what they produce." His message of hope comes in the form of action, of community restoration, of looking outwards. "Seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find welfare." For those war-torn people of Israel to begin their own healing in exile, they needed to take action within their community to remember who they were and whose they were. The bottom line is that before we are called to believe or to profess our faith or to confess our sins. God just wants us to remember. It never says that the Samaritan leper trusted in Jesus or that he was religious. He just came to Jesus trembling. Maybe he had his doubts, but Jesus responded to him. And Jesus responds to us too. Going back to that long prayer in the Book of Common Prayer, we might just shorten that. Kind of like how that the message shortens and simplifies some of these translations, just to say, God, help me remember you. There's no prerequisite to this ask. Just like that Samaritan leper, when we are able to turn around and to fix our eyes on that great physician and to remember his life, death, and resurrection, we too will rejoice in a way that can't help but shape how we act towards our friends and our families and our community. Not all of us are able to remember, but we, you and I, everyone here, and everyone in the Church Universal, we are the collective memory of God's saving grace among us. It's free, and it's offered to us all, even when we forget. Thanks be to God.